Well, that's it for Sprouts. Sprouts is distributed and coordinated by Pacifica Radio Network. Thanks to Jim Bennett and Michael Yoshida for satellite operations. Our air traffic controller is Ursula Rudenberg. You can find us on the web at SproutsRadio.org. This week's producer, Pop Defect Radio, from Free Radio Santa Cruz in Santa Cruz, California. I'm Skidmark Bob. See you next week on Sprouts.
July 29th at 8 p.m. at the usual Gorilla Drive-In spot. Please join Dances with Kittens, a local youth-run collective, in this very special presentation of The Southlander. The Southlander is the epic diary of a desperate musician. It chronicles a man named Chance and his journey through Los Angeles in the search for an elusive keyboard. The movie is flawlessly graceful, combining the adventure of Dead Man, the romance of Casablanca, and the obscurity of Repo Man. The film sparkles with a star-studded cast, including the intergalactically acclaimed musicians Beck, Beth Orton, Ross Angeles, and ironically, 70s funk star Mother's Child. The movie is so good, the LA Times called it surreal. Once again, this is a very special Gorilla Drive-In at the usual spot for Dances with Kittens, a local youth-run collective that is dedicated to social change in creative and thoughtful ways. They have no set leadership and have many creative and unique political actions around Santa Cruz. They are focused on issues of do-it-yourself lifestyle, anti-corporate action, as well as counter-military recruitment and other local issues. Once again, special Gorilla Drive-In, 8 p.m., Friday, July 29th, at the railroad tracks at Fair Avenue on the west side of Santa Cruz. Enjoy a film presented by a local youth collective in a great outdoor environment.
Next up on Free Radio, Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides with me. I'm Robert Norse. Stick with me for 2 hours. We're going to be covering the medical marijuana struggle, the successful medical marijuana struggle at last Tuesday's City Council meeting, as well as the unsuccessful struggle for a rational law around unruly assembly parties, loud parties, and so forth, and things of that sort. So stay tuned for Civil Rights in Santa Cruz. Now you see them, and now you don't.
The government wants to have our movement.
Welcome to Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris, and this is a show about civil rights in Santa Cruz and sort of local politics, cover a variety of subjects, sometimes controversial, sometimes rather tedious, it seems. That was Morgan Firestar you were listening to, an anti-psychiatric activist who died at her own hand in 1996 after decades of work to assist people who are in trouble, who are fighting, I don't know, a number of things, but one of the things they're fighting is the psychiatric system of forced medication, forced hospitalization, the right to have basic rights as they struggle with other spiritual and personal crises. And that, of course, was sort of the watchword, well, it was the watchword for John Stewart, who was an activist around that same issue. We did a tribute to him about a week ago. Actually, I think it was on Sunday. Last Sunday we did some of that tribute. And another person died, actually, in the last week, Lotus Maynard. And I don't think I've mentioned her on the air yet. I attended her memorial service Tuesday. And those of you who remember Lotus, she was a worker here with the Welfare Parents Support Group, and then the group that was subsequently called We Listen. And if anybody wants to call in and say a few words about Lotus, about what she did, who she was, how you felt about her, feel free to do that. I just knew her as a very good person who put me up when I was homeless and as a renter. She was also an activist with the Santa Cruz Union of the Homeless back in 1992 as we struggled to reclaim public property for public use and to get some recognition and acknowledgement and restoration of the basic rights and dignity of homeless people. We occupied the property across from Stapleton's before it was the Gateway Delight, that great center we have out there now near Highway 1. It was in a piece of Caltrans property. We set up tents and so forth. We were arrested. We were not tried. We were charged with trespass, I think six of us, and then charges were dropped. We got some kind of minor recognition from, I believe it was then Mayor Byers. She was, I believe, mayor in the summer of, actually, no, it was Mayor Lane, 92. Back then, that was 13 years ago. The same year, Lotus was involved with the protest at the Heiner House. That was previously the old building with the old police station, or part of the old police station, that they wanted to demolish. Instead, we occupied it until they agreed, and we kind of saved it for family housing. We didn't quite get what we wanted. Linda LeMaster was one of the activists who was involved in that. She often speaks on the air here at Free Radio and is now works with a group called Housing Now in Santa Cruz. And plus, she, of course, was later, she was the chair of the Homeless Issues Task Force, city-appointed group, as well as the chair of the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women. And a shrewd and insightful person who's been struggling with the issue of housing all her life and has a lot of friends who've been struggling with that same issue. She was a close friend of Lotus's and just a hail and farewell to Lotus Maynard of Santa Cruz. If you want to call in and talk about this, that, or anything else, feel free to do so. The phone number here is 831-427-3772. That's 427-FRSC for Free Radio Santa Cruz. And you can also, you might be able to jump on pages in color. I'm about to find out if that actually is working. It's that clicking you hear in the background. It will tell me if we actually can get on here. We've had some problems because there's a plug-in that's been required, some obscure thing which I don't understand, but it looks like we may be a go. We are a go. Yeah. So if you want to get in touch via the chat room, you can go to pagesincolor.com on your computer and ask any questions or make any comments that you may have. Particularly helpful if the phone line is busy, but you can do it at any time. And I will try to keep an eye on pagesandcolor.com. If you want to catch me after the show, or if you want to leave me a comment that is not for public consumption, you can give a call to the Huff Line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, whose phone number is, oddly enough, 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, 423-4833. And Huff also has a website, not terribly updated, but one of these days, and I've been doing some rudimentary work on it, hopefully it'll get better. And it's got some interesting articles that are somewhat timeless, because they continue to describe conditions in Santa Cruz that still exist, and to explode myths that are still passed around as public currency, like the so-called magnet theory myth, which claims that if you allow homeless people basic human rights like the right to sleep, it will cause, I quote from Mike Rodkin, millions of people, he's our mayor, to come to town, and therefore we can't possibly allow human rights because everybody would come and want them. I mean, come on. And you can find discussions of that and other items by good writers like myself, Becky Johnson, Thomas Levitt, other homeless activists and advocates at the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, www.huffsantacruz, all one word, all small letters, .org. So check it out. And you can also find this show, Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, that you're listening to right now on Free Radio, archived there. And you can hear, hey, hour after hour of old Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides shows. Think of the thrill. So good resource for you to check out. And also it may be a resource where I'm going to be putting up more information because of difficulties with Santa Cruz Indie Media, which, though I still regard it as an excellent source of information, as I've mentioned in the past, its new practice of banning, well, specifically Becky Johnson, but banning a person not on the basis of any particular policy, but just sort of because they don't like... There's a dispute about her activities around Israel and Palestine. There's a in terms of her speech about it. But there's also, I'm more concerned about homeless activists being essentially eliminated on homeless subjects. And I think that it's important that we try to make and draw distinctions. And I'm going to continue to urge different groups that have objections to activists on one ground or another to try to separate these issues. And I know that people take a different view on this than I do, but I feel pretty strongly about it. Hence, in the future, it's going to be important to find places to post that don't, frankly, or rather arbitrarily remove you if they don't like your associations, because that's the reason that Huff activist Becky Johnson isn't able to post on Santa Cruz Indie Media. Her associations and her alleged actions, which I don't think rise to that kind of response, and I don't think do the community any good by doing that. But that's a problem we have to work out, and there are real concerns that people have, too, that I hope we can all address at some point, and I'll be continuing to bring them up. However, there are also issues that actually got brought up in the last few days that have been, well, encouraging. At City Council, the Santa Cruz City Council, under the leadership of Mayor Mike Rodkin, did one of its done deals, which normally I am skeptical, scornful, and contemptuous of, but this was a good done deal, although, you know, done deals are always problematic. You don't get, you know, if the agenda is sort of fixed in advance and you've got the result fixed, it tends to throw a shadow on the democratic process. But this situation was the afternoon decision to permit Lisa Molyneux's Greenway Medical Marijuana Dispensary. And that apparently, although it's still going through some sort of process, it is essentially passed the city council and is now... if I understand properly, and I'm hoping to have Lisa on the air on Sunday by phone, if nothing else, to get sort of an update, it is going, and maybe we should actually see something happening. Lisa's been kicking down $5,000 a month for an empty building out in the Harvey West while the city council has been twiddling its thumbs up to now when it actually took action on Tuesday. And thank you, Mike Rodkin. Thank you, Emily Riley. Thank you, city council, for doing this. And I'm going to play a little tape about this, not so much in celebration, because, frankly, though the actual permit was passed, as I understand it, although now it has to go through the police department and the public works again and so forth, it's still, they showed some significant hostility to reforming the law, which in essence has closed all medical marijuana clubs for 5 years. And in a way, they're trying to justify their own law by letting this one club finally open up. I've talked about the Santa Cruz's medical marijuana ordinance, which bans medical marijuana clubs downtown, which bans them in the commercial corridor, in effect, even though it says in theory they can operate along Soquel and Mission. But in fact, if you look at the concentric circles where you are not allowed to have clubs because of the proximity to schools and things of that sort, really unnecessary 600-foot setbacks, you have very little area to do it. Instead, you're kind of the isolated areas out in the Harvey West, industrial areas, and it's hard to get a landlord to let you rent there. And then, of course, you've got the yowling of the Harvey West Association business people who, everything is kind of stuck out on the Harvey West, the homeless service center and so forth, and Harvey West residents and businesses to some extent justifiably complain that everything is put out there instead of being distributed reasonably throughout the city. So we need a different kind of law which doesn't discriminate against marijuana and at all, and certainly doesn't discriminate against medical marijuana, and recognizes that a club downtown was never a problem. It wasn't a problem when it was there on Maple Street from 1993 to 1998. It wasn't a problem when the clubs were opening up again. Andrea Tischler's Compassion Flower Inn, which is not a club, but which is, people, dare I say it, medicate there. I mean, God, for heaven's sake. Smoke the dreaded marijuana. Inhale. Eat the marijuana. Of course, not a block away. People are getting drunk out of their minds on toxic alcohol, which is just fine. And the city, I guess, to some extent, maybe making a profit off of. I don't know how much money the city makes off of alcohol establishments. But the answer, it seems to me, is a sort of a form of tax and regulate as a way to proceed. And it's been proposed up in Oakland and passed by voters up there. Should be done here. But we aren't hearing any voices at the city council speaking about that issue. In spite of the good move on Tuesday, passing Lisa Molinow's medical marijuana permit for Greenway, which is not only going to be an open club soon, I hope, but it's also going to be one which serves low-income people, which I think is even more important and more significant for people who listen to this show, particularly people who are poor and homeless, or homeless. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to grab a little bit of the tape from the city council meeting Tuesday where the permit was passed. We're going to play it. Tape quality is not the best, but I think it's audible. And you're going to hear Lisa Molyneux talk. You're going to hear some public testimony, and then I'm going to sort of move on. Because there was a relatively long, drawn-out discussion of, what kind of restrictions should we put on the club? Should they allow clones? We wouldn't want to let those homeless people medicate on site. And, what if they went outside and smoked in the park nearby, et cetera? And you want to make sure that if they do, you pull their cards and don't let them come back to the club, this sort of stuff. Which, to me, is part of a prohibition mentality. It really is. And, there were no police stats that indicated any particular problems. The police dredged up reports from different cities how other police departments in other cities didn't want medical marijuana dispensaries to open up. And I think they cited cities like Fairfax and Rockland and so forth. And they cited, some anecdotal problems like theft because marijuana is so valuable. But this was a done deal, as I said. Rotkin had decided it was a time to fish or cut bait here. He was getting lots of flack. He got a letter from Valerie Corral in May of Wham. Finally, after 5 years, Corral speaks up. Thank you, Valerie. I still will retain the right to grumble about this issue and to suggest that we need a broader front on this issue. We need to keep our heads higher, not lower, as this crazy new Supreme Court gets organized and as the feds continue their repression campaign. We need to demand more of our city officials, not praise them, pat them on the back, and fluff them to death for the little things that they do rather and the big things they don't do. So I'm going to be doing that. I've been doing that for years, and I'll keep doing that. I think if more people did that, we'd get more done, frankly. And we'd actually get some city council members who are committed to doing something instead of to, passing off Ron Lau's property to Bolton Hill and, doing deals under the bleachers with the Seaside Company and having unruly party laws that are cooked up essentially in back rooms where the students aren't invited. All this kind of stuff, which has been going down recently, it's nothing new. This is the city council. These are the politicians that, parade their progressive labels every 4 years and then vote the other way. And occasionally they have to do something to show that they're not entirely, utterly, either blind or shameless. And so they pass a medical marijuana club. And good for them. It's about time. Now let's examine the law. And you'll hear speakers talking about the law. But what you don't hear, because I haven't really queued it up, and it will take some editing to find it, is Ed Porter pompously reciting how he will not allow any changes in the law. It's a wonderful law. It works brilliantly. He came perfectly prepared to say no to the Medical Marijuana Club, but he's been persuaded that, Lisa Molyneux is not going to run off with the city children and the treasury and the morality and so forth, so he's okay with it. Thank you, Ed Porter, author of the Sit on the Sidewalk on 95% of the Sidewalk Downtown Law. Go to jail or get a ticket or get moved along by a character with a badge and a gun. There's a lot to be said about Ed Porter, some of which I've said, but other people need to say it, and they need to say it publicly, and they need to say it to him directly. He will not return my phone calls. He's afraid to come on this show. He doesn't mind having me arrested for trying to record this, his committee activity, legally and openly. But he's not willing to confront these issues directly in a fair forum, and that's too bad. And I hope he changes his mind, because one time I called Ed Porter, Councilmember Ed Porter, the best of the worst, referring to the city council members who are running and likely to win. I, of course, was the best of the best when I was running last time, but we won't get into that and my 42 votes. So, you're tuned to Free Radio. It's 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org. Call-in number is 831-427-3772. Let's see if we actually have a little operational tape here and if it's audible. Chief of Police speaking. And that, of course, was Howard Scarry, our chief of police. notice again the lack of really specific stats. And in this situation, I'm not one to complain much, because even though the police department recommended against the permit, as did the Parks and Rec department, which should really give you some idea of the quality of those two organizations on these kinds of issues, those two departments. There's nothing wrong with expressing concerns and investigating them, but coming out with these knee-jerk right-wing positions, I think, frankly, does a real disservice to everybody in the community and actually besmirches the image and the reputation of Santa Cruz, and shows us that we have an internal bureaucracy in both these departments which is much more reactionary and much more conservative and much more behind the times than the community generally and supposedly the politicians that we elect. And in fact, that's always been the case. The politicians have never challenged the police department or the Parks and Rec or the redevelopment agency people who have or the city manager, Dick Wilson, city manager for life, who have real power in this city. And frankly, I would encourage you not to vote for any politicians who aren't willing to do a thorough house cleaning on these issues. And since none of them are, I don't know if any of us are going to be voting very soon. We have to vote, I guess, in certain other ways. Initiatives are a good idea. Recalls are a great idea. Referenda are fine. But, you know, to put your faith in the people like Tony Madrigal, who one day talks about voting, about looking into the sleeping ban, and then the next day will no longer talk to the human rights organization because it is essentially played a tape of its public meeting on the air here. Even though it was a public meeting, even though Madrigal was there, supposedly speaking to members of the public, he is so embarrassed about his positions that he now will not even speak to the members of the human rights organization. Which, to me, it's kind of par for the course for politicians, and it's no big surprise, and I've never had a lot of confidence in Madrigal anyway. But for us, we need to change these things, and we need to recognize the realities so that we can proceed to get some new realities going. The other thing about the police department that's interesting to me in this whole issue on the medical marijuana situation is I don't know. I didn't talk to Howard Scarry about this. And, you know, he was around, but I was kind of running around doing other things. Maybe I will when I see him again. I don't think he's actually returned calls from Huff in the year he's been police chief. And maybe we can try again to get in touch with him, Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with. But I wonder... I frankly wonder if, at some level, the police department didn't really support this, even though they said they didn't. He didn't talk very long against it or very strongly. And the same is true with Parks and Rec. And people were telling me, oh, well, they were smiling as they left, and so they weren't the officials, the Danette Shoemaker, Howard Scarry. They were really actually not unhappy that the Lisa Molyneux got her Greenway Medical Marijuana Club permit on last Tuesday. But... who knows? Maybe they've been smiling because they were thinking of, I don't know, all the wonderful new police powers they're going to get under the Patriot Act, or not the Patriot Act, under a Homeland Security grants the city council routinely applies for and gets. So, which we don't talk about too much, do we? You don't hear that great liberal Mayor Rotkin, that great socialist progressive, talking about those issues. And, of course, when we try to bring them up on the consent, because they're on the consent agenda usually at city council, what we find is you talk for... longer than you're allowed by the new restrictive city council rules, you end up getting severely punished physically, dragged off to jail, and then facing 2 years in jail, as I do, for disrupting a public meeting by standing at the mic waiting for my 2 minutes to speak. More again from the medical marijuana discussion last Tuesday.
Thank you. We do have our fair share, more than our fair share, at times of illegal activity at Harvey West Park. It's a constant battle just trying to keep the area safe and clean for all the folks that do use the park. So we are concerned about introducing this year's experience of close proximity to the park. Thank you.
This is Lisa Molyneux talking now, the person with the permit application. Now, notice how in a done deal situation where Rotkin favors the outcome, which is he favors the permit, and he's letting proponents speak, of which I'm one, actually, he gives people 3 minutes. Now, it's also true that there weren't that many speakers, so you know that's another consideration. But this is actually a public hearing, and in a way he should be providing 3 minutes for individuals and 5 minutes for organizations. For all of you out there who are speaking at events in the future, and there's going to be no city council meetings for the next 6 weeks, for those of you who are interested in knowing that, they go on their August recess. The police do not continue to harass, arrest, awaken, move along, and otherwise second-class citizenize poor and homeless people for doing essential life-saving activity, I mean life-sustaining behavior, I should say, trying to do things they need to survive, like sleep. But there's not going to be any council meetings coming up. Anyway, Rotkin is here. We have a situation where we do have 3 minutes to speak. It's a sort of a, you know, as I said, I'm a little bit, you know, uncomfortable with these done deal. I'm definitely uncomfortable with done deal situations. I'd rather see a real public process. And of course, there's no real public process at all, or no discussion, no meaningful discussion at all. Though it was brought up at the Planning Commission of the medical marijuana ordinance, which the city put together in the back room with the corrals and essentially closed all clubs for 5 years. There's no acknowledgement of responsibility there. There's no acknowledgement of the need for change. The corrals have, or Valerie has, to her credit, finally, in May, in a letter that's private, although she did not show at this city council meeting, although, as I understand it, she did write another letter to the city council urging them to grant Lisa Molinow her permit, and that was good, and I commend her for that. But, of course, we need a reform in the laws, for not just for our local Santa Cruz situation, because there is, you know, it's been mentioned by Pebbles Trippett, medical marijuana patients union activist for up in Mendocino County, that there is this new collusion between federal authorities and conservative city governments. It's not sort of a necessarily a conscious collusion, but it is it seems to be a concert of interests which results in their creating zoning laws which make it very, very difficult for people to do what they voted to do, Proposition 215, to allow themselves to use marijuana medically, or just to use marijuana under the constitutional guarantees of, you know, Ninth Amendment right to privacy. It's nobody's business if you're smoking marijuana. I mean, if you're blowing it in somebody's face, obviously it is, but if you're not, it's nobody's business, and we've known that for decades. And the city has known it for decades, but the police department is still running around issuing citations to people for recreational marijuana use and still using it as a basis for stripping people of their rights, searches. There are 750,000 people arrested last year for marijuana nationwide. So let's not pretend that we have in any way got a grip on this problem or that the city council is in any meaningful way responding to it. It's not. And that has to be said so we can keep a real clear eye as to what's going on and what's not going on. Additionally, if you want to look at the city council process that's happening here, I have not reviewed the tape, but I was told by those who watched the city council meeting that there was absolutely no items pulled from the consent agenda. And what this means, folks, is that a lot of the city business goes on in the consent agenda. That's the part of the city council agenda. All items are clumped together, and they're passed as a single item with no discussion and no debate, unless they're pulled off the consent agenda. And I used to, of course, pull items off regularly until I was unceremoniously dragged out of city council and injured by Lieutenant Clark on June 14th, and now faces, I've continued to say, charges in court on that issue coming up actually next Wednesday. I go to continued arraignment in Department 1, for all of you who want to wave at me. No need to show up. It's only an arraignment, and I'm still looking for an attorney, so if anybody has any legal skills they wish to contribute, please give me a call. Putting in this quick plea, 423-HUFF is the number to call if you are a legal eagle or interested in giving me some legal support around the issue of being charged for disrupting a public meeting. The point, however, I was talking about was the consent agenda. After this behavior by the city council, essentially allowing a shutdown of the consent agenda for those members of the public, myself, who want to speak for 2 minutes on an item and are told, well, you've spoken on other items, so now you can't speak on this item. It's just not in accord with the public requirements of the Brown Act, which is the state law. And, of course, it's also not an requirement with the First Amendment and the city process, which should allow every member of the public the opportunity to speak briefly, you know, not forever, but briefly on the items they want to speak on. That's part of the so-called democratic process. We actually, even if that right were granted, of course, we don't really have that meaningful a democratic process here in Santa Cruz because you aren't really, there's no committee meetings you can visit at and actually give real input to. And as I said, these issues reach city council as done deals. But the consent agenda at this city council meeting, we're looking at the last city council meeting in July, the last one of the summer, had absolutely no items pulled by the public from the consent agenda. That's what I was told. And I wonder if that might have been partially because of the fact that people, on understanding they can speak for such a short period of time on these items, and that if they choose to try to speak for longer, may face, physical punishment, because that's what I got. Maybe that's one of the reasons that happened. Anyway, getting back to the medical marijuana discussions, here is some discussion from the public. And I've just been told by a caller that we're having tape problems out there. So thank you, caller, for calling in and making that known. I don't know what the problem is, although I just noticed the tape sound suddenly dropped. But apparently there was a problem even before that. So I'm going to have to look into that situation. Let's hear a little more of Morgan Firestar. And from her album No Strings Attached, it's called Mr. Psychiatrist. And we're going to be actually in the shows ahead, I'm going to be hoping to interview author Grace Jackson, who's a psychiatrist who has written about the dangers of psychiatric drugs. She's kind of picked up where Bob Whitaker, the author of Mad in America, has left off. And she's been emailing me, and I've been emailing her and hoping I can get her on a show soon. So let's hear a little from a worker on the ground who did a lot of strong singing and a lot of strong action around the issue of psychiatric stuff and making it trying to humanize the situation there. Thank you. And that was Morgan Firestar. And I don't think that was Mr. Psychiatrist. I think that was Children in a Cage. So for all of you careful listeners, I'm going to try to, I'd like to see these songs made available. And who knows, maybe they can be posted on the Internet because Morgan's got a great voice and she addresses herself to issues that even some current colleagues of hers, like Jane Kaiser, still consider of Psychiatric Inmates Rights Collective, PIRC, are looking at, but other groups are essentially, kind of have caved in to taking funds from government groups, and they are not actively pursuing other alternatives, particularly alternatives that recognize the fact that psychiatric medications have a very, very, very serious downside that is only, now being discussed. And even that discussion is muted, except on fine places like here on my show and certain other spots, too. I'm going to play a little now from the Wham rally of several weeks ago. I didn't spend a lot of time recording the Wham rally itself because, frankly, others were doing that probably much more effectively than I with my, bizarro, backwards little tape recorder. But I was kind of hovering on the outskirts of the crowd. This was a march to City Hall in which Wham, Women and Men for Medical Marijuana, announced that they were giving up their farm and that they were giving out the clones to the patients, and the city council members, all many of them, dutifully stood by and supported them. They declared it not Medical Marijuana Day, but Wham Day, and there was no mention at all made about this medical marijuana club application or the medical marijuana famine that we face in Santa Cruz for 5 years. But again, and the follow-up has been that we now have, in essence, though Elisa Molino, I think, has to go back to the planning department to work out some of the details, she has been granted a 5-0 unanimous vote by the Planning Commission and also by the City Council, 7-0. So she's presumably a go. And so that's the good side. That's the upside. Anyway, here's a little bit about what was happening on the edges of the Wham rally. I talked about it a little bit in prior shows, how it was, there weren't actually, thug goon squads wandering around, though police did get involved at a certain point, and as you're going to hear, at least from an anecdotal account, and there were people walking around with little kind of Wham jackets on. There were monitors telling me, don't give out flyers because people will just throw them away and it will produce a litter problem. And, of course, the flyer was about make 3 phone calls to help medical marijuana in Santa Cruz so that there is, and to stop the drug war in Santa Cruz, which is going to continue even if Valerie Corral is and Wham gets the utmost protection, as it has, frankly, from everybody but the feds. In Santa Cruz. The rest of us, prior to the opening of Greenway, have nowhere else to go. And there's a war on against people who are using marijuana any other way and who are using it medically even, but can't get access to it because, they don't have a running vehicle to get them up to Oakland and so forth. So here's a little from that. From that rally.
Okay.
Hi, we're talking with
D.
And D, you walked in the march that I just missed?
Yeah, right. I just came because I have to go do something. Mm-hmm. But I just saw the normal people walking along. And
how normal were the normal people? MCAT's the National Organization for the Reform of the Marijuana Laws.
Right? Yeah, right. In fact, when I asked them if they were normal, I was expecting some sort of quip. But, in fact, they knew exactly what I meant. And why I asked them is because in 1964, I remember marching with Normal when it first started out, and there were only about 10 or 15 of us. And we'd march in San Francisco up to Union Square. And
what year was that?
1964. That was when it started. Yeah, so I thought, well, you know, for old time's sake, I'd join them.
And here you are.
And here I am. Wow. Yeah, right. And they're still here.
And what was the response from the crowd?
From the crowd?
Well,
along
from people
the way?
Watching, yeah.
Actually, I joined them right here. So
of
I
course,
didn't
we're
really,
at the corner of
really
Church and Pacific.
Yeah, they...
Well, I'm going to rush up and catch them. Yeah. And we've been talking with...
Yeah, they're going to have some program up there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm going to have to miss it.
Cheers. So I'm walking with a guy who's... his officers arrived. Let's see what the deal is. Hey, what's happening, Sergeant? Looks like you're okay.
Yeah.
Okay, it's about 1 o'clock. I'm talking with Deadhead Red. And Deadhead, you're kind of on your bike and you're headed out of the WHAM rally, a little bit anxious because something happened to you a few moments ago.
I was chased by a police officer because he saw me light a bowl up.
And what did anybody object to your lighting a bowl up?
No. No one objected. We weren't bothering anyone.
And are you a medical marijuana person or simply a person who's trying to exercise his constitutional right?
Well, I would qualify under medical marijuana, to be honest with you. Until the federal government ratifies it like the states do, I'm leery to be put on a list. If the government can't honor what the states do, then I've just got to be leery of my government.
Not trust your government? What's wrong with you?
Well, you know, hey, I may be a pothead, but I'm not stupid.
So you say a police officer came up. What did the officer say to you?
He didn't say anything. I didn't give it that point. I took off in the crowd, and then I left.
But it appeared that he wanted to stop you from medicating yourself?
Either that or he just wanted to follow my footsteps for some reason, because he followed me all around the crowd.
And that was the sergeant that we just saw approach?
Correct.
Sergeant Black, I believe. There goes a squad car over there, perhaps unrelated. Has anybody else been lighting up and doing what is obviously, I think, the thing to do in this kind of a crowd?
Well, I can smell it a little here and there, but you don't see the large amount of people out here doing that because you got the strong police presence right here. As soon as they light up, they're going to come over and arrest you.
Well, you also have a... You know, I don't know if they have the courage to arrest you, because this is a group of people who I think are opposed to arrests generally, but they certainly sound like they're harassing you.
Well, he sure seemed like he had something for me, because he was in a hurry to get to me. I don't think it was to tell me not to do it. He was on a mission.
Were you within 10 feet of the building? Because there's some no smoking law within 10 feet of the building, I think.
No, I went out to the street, to the sidewalk, where I was told that it wouldn't affect the rally, because I was asked to do that by a rally organizer.
So you're respecting what I regard as not necessarily the wisest rally policy of not encouraging people to do the natural thing and light up and do what they need to do and show people that they shouldn't be afraid doing it.
Well, it's not the most courageous thing, I think, that they could do, but it's what they asked, and it is their rally. I'm just trying to show respect.
Right. Well, I think that's also a rally for all of us. This is WHAM doesn't own this rally. It's a rally for everybody who wants to see medical marijuana. And I'm glad that WHAM is doing it. And certainly they've got a lot of credentials among the media and the community. And I'm glad to see people attending. But I'm glad to see people like yourself also standing up and doing what you think is right.
Thank you very much. And I hope one day all of us can do the same. Because if you can buy beer or cigarettes at 7-Eleven, why can't you buy marijuana? It's absurd. It's just absurd. That's all I got to say.
Been talking with?
Deadhead Red.
Thanks, Deadhead Red.
Thank you.
Any comments?
Oh, that's how you can say.
All right, man. We're talking with?
Pat True.
Pat True, the infamous hunger striker who last seen at UCSC trying to get them to... respond to police misconduct on the evening of April 19th or April 18th, something like that?
Yes. And right now it appears to have fallen in the typical black hole. There's no word about whether or not any progress is being made on getting the students totally the... Rats, what am I trying to say? Any kind of punishment, scholastic punishment, and I have not heard any word on whether or not they are adopting the kind of guidelines that would prevent violence being used against nonviolent student activities and protests and demonstrations.
Officers are not being held accountable for their abusive tactics?
Not to my knowledge.
What about the drug war on campus? I mean, this is all about medical marijuana and the right to use it, and I think more broadly, the right to use marijuana, period. Is there much sentiment on campus that you've seen, or have you been up on campus lately?
Yes. I'm not aware of any large coordinated effort on the part of legalizing marijuana. I know that Normal does have some activities up there. And
Student group for a sensible drug policy, I think.
Right, right, exactly. Mm-hmm. But I haven't heard anything lately from that front either. I think, however, you know, just in casual talking with people, that's a sentiment, a positive, that students are positive towards legalizing marijuana.
Do you think that, I guess there's a summer session, or is there a summer session up on campus? I mean, is the campus completely closed? What kind of, is there any activity this summer that sounds like there's not, following up on, I heard a lot of promises or good intentions from student leaders who wanted to respond to the police misconduct, and of course, I myself filed a Public Records Act request asking what their rules were regarding camping. I asked to see their emails between the police department and the administration, and public record stuff, dispatch logs, why the police were called, what their instructions were. And, of course, not a single word has yet been released. So it's a hard row to hoe. You guys had a rally, and I guess they had a memorial feast for you in honor of your fast, and it looks like you've gone from fast to feast. Like some others of us here. What do you predict is lies in the future for people who want to restore freedom of assembly up at UCSC?
Right now, there is summer session up there, but usually it's kind of an intense studies deal. So students are usually pretty much buried in their studies. And some of the major players are off for the summer, but we expect to pick up where we left off in June, this September, when the students come back from for regular classes.
And if people want to get in touch with you and get the latest updates, of which there probably are none, how can they do that?
My email is ptru@ipmts.ucsc.edu.
I better get my pencil and paper immediately. Thank you, Pat. Talking about the man with the python and the green metal cannabis leaves around his bare chest. Your name, sir?
Rob Sterling.
That's not a python. That's a boa.
You did get it right. And I'm so proud of it that you did get it right.
What's her name?
His name is Ian L.
And your name is?
Robert Sterling.
And Robert, what brings you and the python? Is the python a medical marijuana user?
He's an Australian, and yeah, they're pretty lenient there in Australia.
Really?
Yeah.
You're not an Australian yourself.
I'm not, but Ian is.
Hi there, Ian.
I'm an Aptosian, a Santa Cruzian, actually, for the past 10 years, and I grew up in Aptos. And I was just bringing Ian down for his morning coffee, as usual, and I was wearing a green shirt and I had to run home and get my beads once I found out that it was a medical marijuana parade today. And don't really know where things stand, so I'm kind of down here to figure out where things stand with the recent kind of Supreme Court thing. And it's kind of unfortunate that it seems like there's going to be two other Supreme Court nominees up for bid, unfortunately, under the regime.
Would it surprise you to know that Santa Cruz City has laws that have essentially prohibited marijuana clubs here for 5 years, local laws?
I did not know that. I know that they were against the raid of the Davenport farm,
right,
and the DEA and whatnot, and the DEA moved in anyway. Our local district attorney was against it, and yet the DEA drug enforcement agents moved in and raided the farm.
Are you aware
regardless?
That our local DEA is continuing to prosecute drug war cases and the cases of people like Roger Minch of the Emporium?
No, I'm not aware of that.
No, you are.
No, I sure am. That's why I'm always learning, always trying to be more informed. Never stop learning.
Well, cool. We've been talking with
Robert Sterling.
Robert, anything else you want to say to the folks out there in Radio Land?
Big it up. Free Radio Santa Cruz is awesome, and keep it going. F the AC, FCC.
F the ACC? You mean fuck the fucking fuckity fuck FCC?
Yeah, I have Sirius Satellite Radio, so yeah, fuck their rule over the airways. And God, I've watched everything go to Clear Channel Radio, which is a little Florida-owned company slash Bush. They even shut someone like Howard Stern down, as commercial as he is, over...
I'm sure Free Radio would never shut down a critical view.
I heard Free Radio got raided.
It did. Hey, thank you.
All right.
So it's about 1:10, and the speeches are still continuing here at Santa Cruz City Hall. There are signs up, I oppose medical marijuana until day 3 of my first chemo TX.
Chemo.
There are numerous signs with a silhouettes of dead medical marijuana patients, presumably from WHAM, RIP WHAM member. Here's one, Wayne Meyer, on the back of a wheelchair guy. Oxycontin kills is another sign. And it looks like Mike Corral is speaking.
All patients walk that walk every day. In this moment, I do issue a challenge to our government. Come to the table. Let us sit together.
And you can kind of hear in the background what he's saying.
Bring all of the available research. Leave the rhetoric behind. If we are wrong, we will shut up and go away. If you are wrong,
and Mike is speaking at a table.
Yeah!
Lives through the barrel of a gun.
Over to the side, council members Tony Madrigal, Cynthia Matthews.
I challenge them to sit at the bedside of those who suffer.
Looks like either Marty or Celia. Looks like possibly council member Emily Riley, also a business owner,
today,
merchant.
I'm sorry to say we will not have our WHAM garden because of the threat of a lifting of our injunction.
And the announcement is being made of the ending of the WHAM garden.
However, we will rely, as we have in the past, on the wonderful community we live in. And this community will help us continue, and continue we will.
And, of course, surrounding Mike is a whole series of small potted cannabis plants.
It does not make others disappear, nor does it make the government's position right. I would like to hear Justice.
Here's a sign. WILP supports WHAM, the freedom to choose your medicine and the peace of mind to heal without the fear of arrest.
Like Martin Luther King, I too have a dream. I dream that all.
And so folks have been here for about 45 minutes now after a half an hour march down the Pacific Avenue, which I wasn't at. Again, we're at Santa Cruz City Hall. And folks are arrayed in the kind of the garden area in front of the fountain. Many medical marijuana patients sitting in chairs off to the side, political dignitaries over to the right, and folks holding up signs, other news media in the area as well. About, I don't know, a third or a fourth the size of, maybe half the size of the previous rally. On 2002, when Mayor Christopher Crone had a medical marijuana giveaway, or WHAM had the giveaway, and Crone at that time declined to answer questions about why medical marijuana was not...
Thank you.
...was not available for people in the city at a dispensary because of his law. I should say not Crone's law, though actually he was on the council, so he was responsible as well. And even though there is, of course, prospects coming up for a change in the opening of one distribution center, Greenways, the law itself is not yet up for reconsideration. And we're now listening to Valerie Corral, or what you can hear from a distance.
No profit would do it by growing the garden together. This action has led us to be met with threats, with harassment, and finally with the arrest of Mike and with me. And as our injunction expires in less than 3 weeks, we again face the possibility of indictment. But would it be more dangerous for us to harbor our fear and to bathe it in silence? If we accept the responsibility to be conscious citizens, then we must continue our work, important work, that in essence protects our Constitution and the egalitarian principles upon which this nation was founded. It seems strange that these principles are considered revolutionary by our government, because we know they are. They are the very doctrines in which America was born. They are fundamental rights, rights that every human being should have. They are the tenets of a democracy, and yes, in a democracy, we can vote to regain access to a plant that was legal for thousands of years before politicians in Washington decided to make it illegal.
All right.
Not the basis of their irrational decision, and it still isn't. Because the U.S. government blocks studies, but in countries where research on medical marijuana is allowed to move forward every day, uncovers new possibilities for reducing symptoms and for eliminating pain.
Take the pause off. We're here with Dr. Fisher and
Zorin.
And you're here because, Dr. Fisher?
Well, to answer literally, Frank Lucido brought me here because I'm going to be joining him in his practice in Berkeley. Shortly. I've beat two criminal cases brought against me by the state attorney general. I fought them to a draw on my medical board case. I beat four wrongful death cases in the civil arena, malpractice cases, and now I'm about to go back to work.
Well, you look like you're kind of, you know, you're in pretty good shape. I don't see you're not missing any limbs. How many years and how much money has this struggle cost you, and where did it happen?
Well, I was arrested on February 18th of 1999, and I haven't practiced medicine since then. My bail was set at $15 million. I was accused of 9 murders. I spent 150 days in jail until Patrick Hallinan could get me out. And at that point, I could have made a deal and gone right back into practice in the middle of 1999. But as a matter of principle, I fought them through at every level.
And the issue here was?
The issue here was opioid analgesic medication for people with chronic intractable pain. I was taking care of primarily poor people in far northern California in Shasta County, and I prescribed more medicine than the state wanted to pay for, so they accused me of murder and took me out of business.
Did any of the relatives of the people who died ever criticize you for what you did?
The Attorney General's agents convinced four families to sue me for wrongful death, but otherwise the support for me was massive, including the husband of one of my patients who died, who stood right by me all the way. He could have done a lawsuit hoping to make money, but he was more principled. But then not all of the people were unprincipled. They were just gullible, and they fell prey to the things that the Attorney General's agents told them about how much money they could make suing me.
Now, are all these cases resolved, or are you still in the midst of any kind of continuing legal struggle?
My legal struggles are over with. I won all the malpractice cases, and three of the four parties actually owe me money for costs.
Are you going to be ending up on the positive or the negative side of the ledger if you look at the last 6 years?
Well, if you look at the last 6 years, my net worth is minus $45,000. I'm 52 years old, and I'm living with my parents in the bedroom where I grew up.
But you're still good looking.
Well, that's in the eye of the beholder, but thank you.
What about the issue you went to jail and you struggled to fight for about accessibility to pain medications for poor people? Has that changed? Has it gotten worse? Has it stayed the same?
The fight is still on about getting opioid analgesic medications to not only to poor people, to anyone who needs them. The pain crisis is an unmitigated public health disaster in this country, and the marijuana issue is an important and visible part of it, but there are tens of millions of people suffering from chronic pain who are going undertreated. The cost to the economy is $100 billion a year. is 16,500 people die every year from taking medications like Motrin or Naprosyn. They're called non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, and the bodies are building up like cordwood. On the other hand, a drug like OxyContin has never killed a patient who took it the way their doctor prescribed it.
So, in terms of 99, is the situation largely the same? Is it different? How are we? There have been no changes in the laws. There have been a change in accessibility.
There is more opioid being prescribed these days, but mostly to people with mild and moderate pain, so that the people with severe pain are going just as untreated or worse than they were in 1999.
You're still living up in Shasta County?
No, I'm living in El Cerrito with my parents. I haven't lived in Shasta County for 6.5 years.
A new fondness for your family, or should we say a certain distrust of the scene in Shasta?
Neither, actually. The reason I live with my parents is financial. My father rents me a room for not very much money, and that's all I can afford right now.
You're here today at this WHAM memorial, the closing of the WHAM garden and the protest against Raich versus Ashcroft, the decision by the Supreme Court. How does that link with your own concerns about pain medications? Have you done much work with marijuana?
I have worked with marijuana, and in fact, I was the first physician in the state of California to take a marijuana case into the courts and win it. That was the case of Sean Malone in Shasta County in 1996. He's a chronic pain patient who was taking medical marijuana along with his opioids, and he was on parole. And during a parole search, they found a few grams of marijuana in his house and arrested him. And we took that to the Shasta County Superior Court and beat it on a motion, I think in the interest of justice. So I've been involved in marijuana, medical marijuana, right from the start.
And has it been well established in Shasta County currently that medical marijuana, there are dispensaries available, it's accessible? Authorities are not prosecuting people for medical marijuana, or what's the story?
I don't think there are any dispensaries for medical marijuana in Shasta County.
As but there aren't in Santa Cruz, I might add.
But the authorities have backed way off on prosecuting medical marijuana patients because we've gone to court and kicked their ass almost every time. Shasta County was the only county in California that didn't vote a majority for Prop 215. But when you put the issue in front of a jury, they always acquit.
And you say this based upon an encyclopedic, fairly extensive knowledge of court cases, or anecdotal, or...
There have been quite a number of court cases in Shasta County against medical marijuana patients, and they've been favorable to the patients in almost every case. The juries want people to have their medicines.
Well, we've been talking with...
I'm Dr. Frank Fisher. I'd like to say something about the parallels between the marijuana and the opioid thing. Medical marijuana is mostly for pain. It works for nausea and appetite and that sort of thing. And opioids are also mostly for pain. And medical marijuana has a high public profile. Opioids don't, because they've been so demonized by the government for so long that they represent the average American's deepest fear. But these are safe, effective medicines, so I see both movements running in parallel, and marijuana movement is just out in front a little bit in terms of publicity. But what we have among the pain patients in this country, and there are tens of millions, are a sleeping giant. When they realize that they're being persecuted by their own government, everything's going to change.
How can pain patients get more information on this subject? You've got a website?
The best place for chronic pain patients to go to learn about opioids is a website for Pain Relief Network. That is the leading grassroots advocacy organization in the opioid analgesic movement.
And again, do you have the website address, or should they just Google? Or
just Google Pain Relief Network and use the name Siobhan Reynolds, S-I-O-B-H-A-N. If those are in the search box, it will pop right up.
Hey, thank you, and thank you for your struggle.
It's a pleasure to see you again out on the street doing the good work.
or at least here at City Hall, without getting arrested. I was arrested a month ago here. But here I am back in business.
Yeah, it's good to be out.
Thank you. Talking with local author and wild and crazy guy, Bandana Peter Stafford, also a participant in the Homeless Garden Project. Still?
Oh, no, I've been at Grey Bears for years.
Sorry, my mistake. As a former participant.
I just wanted to call your attention to this little booklet I came across. It was called The Dangers of Not Smoking Marijuana. And these included things like, you forget that you're a freak. Do you think the president knows what he's doing? These are the dangers of not smoking.
I'm not smoking, yeah.
Yeah, you think that nobody will love you unless you're somebody other than yourself. You can see that the author had a keen eye for
wise heart
behavior.
Wow, and how can people get this booklet?
I only saw it once, and I gave it to Columbia University.
Contact Columbia University immediately. Thank you, Peter Stafford.
Yeah, Stafford collection up there.
All right. Thanks, Peter.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we have a somewhat speedy part of the tape here.
To what? What the governments and what others are trying to oppress, where I think the medicine should be valid. I believe that the medicine should be looked at. Its properties are wonderful. It's very natural.
I can't disagree with you at this time, although I was thinking of raising my sign, Stop the Marijuana People Before They Poison Our Country with their... Wait till I go back to my Marijuana Anonymous group, and I can get back to you.
I hear you from a Republican right-wing stance. I have my dad's a doctor, Dr. Henshaw at Lodi. My grandfather was the mayor of Pleasanton, California. They were not liberal with drugs or Santa Cruz, and they had the beliefs of America, and they were well within the right wing. Now, if you listen to them talk, I believe that they've never had a chance to sit on a sunset and feel the beauty of their lover or their understanding, where if they're sick or hurting, that they could hold them right and feel this natural medicine that came from the Indians. As well as my father is a natural doctor, and he knows that the properties of what medical marijuana wants to bring to this country have been here before the government existed. And the war machine and its billions with its tax monies, as well as the medical industry, are far more of a crime than somebody actually lighting up a spliff, so to say, or even more, somebody that's a medical professional.
You know, I saw someone being pursued by police at this rally for lighting up a joint. Can you imagine?
I think they should let it go. But I really believe that at the higher level of medical, if you implement marijuana, it will become something sophisticated rather than this street image that we see.
We've been talking with...
Zoran.
Yeah. We're talking with the man under the black hat. Your name, sir?
Frank Lucido. Dr. Frank?
And Frank, have you been encountering some flack from state authorities?
Not anymore, but about 2 years ago, I was one of the 10 doctors being investigated by the state medical board, and then I formed a group called medicalboardwatch.com, and I've been going to the medical board for the last 9 quarterly meetings to testify about doctors being inappropriately investigated.
And what impact has that had, in your opinion?
I think they've been more circumspect in some of their investigations. One of them even called me up after my appearance on the O'Reilly Factor to have a talk with the doctor with pretty poor standards that was outed on that program.
O'Reilly naturally stood behind you 100%.
Well, I was in a funny position of either agreeing with Bill O'Reilly or agreeing with this doctor with fairly dismal standards, and I took the middle road and said, this sounds like the worst cases of HMOs. I require documentation for my patients, but they tell me, why should I see my doctor? They're just going to give me pain pills, all the pills I want. So I wasn't
offer O'Reilly a joint in this situation.
No, but I said, nice spin, Bill. No, I didn't.
Very good, very good. Yeah. Well, so what about the? You think the attacks on doctors have lessened as a consequence of your work?
I think so. Yeah.
And are doctors more prone to prescribe marijuana, particularly after Raich versus Ashcroft, not prescribe, do recommendations?
Well, what I'd like to see is more individual doctors doing it for their own patients. We have more. You know, we have more very low standard doctors doing it, but basically I'd like to see more. You know, there's 1,500 doctors in California that have written at least one recommendation, so that's the people I want to work on, is more the standard general doctor who's also knows the patient.
1,500 out of how many doctors are actually practicing in California?
How many practicing?
About 60,000.
60,000?
In practice.
What a gutless crew, man. So, yeah. Sorry.
Oh, totally.
A little editorial comment here.
Totally. I totally agree.
Dr. Fisher speaking.
Doctors are under threat from so many different organizations that can go after them, from the local cops to the state cops to the feds, the medical board, to malpractice cases, and the DEA administrative actions, that doctors are the most conservative group you might ever attempt to find if you were looking for people who are going to be cautious.
And yet here you are, two doctors, bucking the tide. What's wrong with you guys? You've been smoking too much.
We try to be safe and appropriate and see what the patients need and what's appropriate.
Where's Dr. Micaria is what I want to know.
You know, he's still one of my heroes. He didn't come today, but
he's out there somewhere.
He's out there, yeah. He's still practicing in Berkeley. And like I said, he has a group called Society of Cannabis Clinicians, and of which I'm a member. And he's like one of the heroes of the movement.
I know he got some sanctioning from a state board or something.
Right. They did not take his license away. They gave him some probation. But he's basically still in practice, doing appropriate and recommendations.
Thank you. We've been talking with...
All right. Frank Lucido.
And...
Frank Fisher. I would add that Dr. Micaria has 9,000 active marijuana patients.
9,000. He's beating that other 1,500 doctors by quite a factor. I mean, he's beating the other 60,000 or 59,000 or whatever. Thank you very much.
All right.
We're talking with newsmaker and cannabis queen Lisa Molyneux. Lisa, you are going to be opening not the Green Ways Club, but the Greenway Club.
Right. Yeah.
It is the Greenway. Which way? The Greenway.
The Greenway, of course.
You did your walking. You walked in the rally.
I did the walk. March. I started at the back, and by the time we got here, I was in the front. I don't really know how that happened, but...
Was it a fairly large march?
It was. I could not see the front from the back, so I was impressed at how many people there were here. And
did you throw tomatoes or
no.
joints? Or?
No. People were clapping on the sidewalks there. That was a good thing.
And that, of course, was the heroine of the hour, Lisa Molyneux, who's hopefully will be opening a clinic within a month. Although, again, I want to get I'll get some of the exact stats from her. Hopefully on Sunday, the show comes back between 9:30. I'll be coming back between 9:30 and 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And actually, here's a more recent statement by Lisa. This is actually commentary that happened after last Tuesday's city council meeting 2 days ago, when the city council voted unanimously to approve the permit, pending, I guess, her working out with the planning department and the police department appropriate procedures or some such thing. But apparently that looks like the green light is in.
It's about 5 o'clock. We're after the Done Deal City Council meeting, where the 7-0, what a surprise, endorsement of Lisa Molyneux's Greenway Medical Marijuana Clinic has come down. I'm out here with...
Kelly Heath.
Lisa Molyneux.
And Becky Johnson.
And there's also a chorus of other questionable medical marijuana advocates, including a police official over there with dark glasses. We'll have to interview him later. But Lisa, you sat in the front row beaming at the city council as they did the Cynthia Matthews, we don't support drugs shuffle, but we'll give you a chance for 6 months if you follow all the rules.
Well, it's a beginning, dude. It's all I can ask for. So hopefully we can address those things as they come up and change them.
Disgustingly positive, isn't she?
I smiled in front of them. It was on purpose. I sat in front of them just on purpose.
You actually are very positive about it. Whenever I've talked to you, you have a very disgustingly positive attitude. After a year, impressive. What was your analysis of how things went down? Anything? Any surprises?
Actually, the surprise really came from that there wasn't any negative public reaction. I mean, not that I expected.
Public or from the city council?
From the public. I thought this was going to be overran because of some things that happened to me yesterday with my lease and my landlord.
What happened there?
He was getting calls from the local businesses about my facility. Personally, he was getting it directly. And caused some problems for me, but we worked it out. So I expected there might be more of that here, but it didn't happen. So maybe that was their last-ditch effort.
There was a nasty letter from the Harvey West Business Association urging that this be opposed.
Notice.
The Parks and Rec Department opposed you. Police opposed you. God opposes you. Why don't you just pack your bags and leave, Lisa?
Did you notice that that letter was not from any of the board members or the president of the association?
No. Who was it from, actually?
I don't know who he is, but it's not from the people I've been talking to.
Mostly central circle of the...
Well, some people don't talk, others take it upon themselves, so.
So...
It's somewhat like I have done.
I was interested in what the...
Becky Johnson speaks.
The police chief and also the parks department were the only two... I mean, they both went on record opposing the application. Danette Shoemaker from Parks and Rec had a lot of concerns about marijuana being smoked in parks, and yet, I mean, I guess here's this location that's so hotly sought after. The Mary Med was looking for the same thing. The thing that came the closest to qualifying under the ordinance, even that, is like 40 feet into a parkland, not anywhere near a playground, as is my reading the ordinance, it has to be within a playground. It doesn't, like, the edge of a park. But and then the police chief, Scary's remarks just didn't seem to justify the opposition.
Kelly, you heard some of this from the back as you took care of a youthful person. What did you think?
I think that it's a very beautiful day in Santa Cruz. That the government, like, it's the people spoke, and I think we got started. We've got medical marijuana in Santa Cruz now, and it's first for a while. I mean, it started and then it stopped, but this is all okayed. You know, this is the beginning and the right.
Were you a patient or user? Are you a smoker of the deadly weed?
Yes, I am a smoker. Yes, my husband's
medical conditions, or are you in fact a recreational user?
Medical conditions.
All right, I want to make sure. We do have a police officer here ready to arrest you. We are talking also with
Lila Franger.
And you are a neighbor to the infamous Lisa M.
Yes, I am.
Do you own a business, or are you just a ne'er-do-well resident?
I am here for support for my neighbor and here to support the cause, because this is long overdue in this town. Santa Cruz is supposed to be a progressive place. Why are we in there hashing out little details about people in Friendship Park? I mean, that should be a sign right there. It's called Friendship Park. Let's
Harvey West, you mean?
Yeah, they're talking about the park that's right next to where this facility is, that's such a problem. I mean, I don't see liquor stores being, you know, criticized like this. I think it's great. At least they're willing to take the chance, review it in 6 months, and she's going to show that it's going to be better than ever and not even any of the problems that they thought. You know, let's go out there and prove that we can do this responsibly.
Are you yourself a business owner, or just are you simply you live there?
I live there.
Have you heard any of the hostile commentary from business people?
No, I haven't.
Do you communicate with business folks? I mean, would they tell you that if there were some criticism?
I don't live near Harvey West, so I don't think I've heard any of those negative comments.
Your neighbor aware of Lisa, at least when she lives, not so your neighbor would not be affected by this corrupting medical marijuana den of iniquity dungeon that she's planning to set up and spiral our community down into a sad drug abuse syndrome.
No, I don't live near the city.
On the west side, you can wave at a distance to all the junkies or to corrupting our youth next to Lisa's, well, of course, forgive my rhetoric. So, in other words, you're a supporter.
Yes, absolutely.
So, Kelly, are you a longtime Santa Cruz resident?
No, I moved here from L.A.
How long ago?
A year ago. And I had a medical marijuana ID card association in L.A., and we did a patients association, so we got people legal.
Did you hear about Lisa down there, or did you hear about her up here?
I heard about her up here.
And you just, she told you about the council meeting, or you heard about it on free radio?
On an email. Got an email about it, so thought I should go check it out. Always show support.
One of the silent majority in the back, both of you didn't say anything at the meeting.
Yes, I would have, but I didn't know if I should bring him up there or not.
You can. And who is this? What is your name?
Caleb.
And how old are you?
5.
And what do you think of all this? Are you getting bored?
Yeah, no.
No. You think it's okay?
Yes, his dad's in jail because of medical marijuana.
Really? Tell us more about this.
His dad and his grandma got caught transporting 2 pounds and 300 grams of hash, and then that was in California, and they were living in Oregon, and so they went to Oregon to bust a grow operation there. And so they got probation in California, and on drug classes they got a court order from a judge that they could smoke on their probation in California, and so they thought they checked it with the judge in Oregon, which they got probation for too, and the judge said no. Like, so they got pulled for a violation of probation. Now they have been in jail for a year and have to serve 4 more months.
What kind of medical condition, though? I find it extremely annoying that you have to cite a medical condition or to smoke marijuana or use it.
For them or for myself?
For them.
For them, my mother-in-law has scoliosis and my husband has his arms don't open all the way.
Now, what do they do while they're in jail? They're not allowed to use medical marijuana in jail?
No.
Even though it is an acceptable treatment in Oregon now?
Yes.
And so, I'm not quite sure I understand. The judge said smoking it was not legal in Oregon?
Under their probation, they weren't allowed to have it.
Is that generally true for people under probation in Oregon, or just because of this particular judge?
In Oregon, their condition of probation was a little stricter than most probations. And so they thought the judge in California checked with the judge in Oregon, and he didn't. And so they just kind of got pulled up there and prosecuted. And they went to the appeals court in the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court decided not to hear it, so they had 72 hours to turn themselves in.
And they've been in jail now for how long?
A year. They've had a 15-month sentence, so they should get out November 22nd.
And their crime, again, is?
Is a violation of probation.
And the probation is for?
For 700 plant grow operation.
Was this one of those infamous profiteers you've heard so much, trying to milk the country of our much-needed money, which we used in the more important projects?
Right. It was right at the time. It was in 97. It was right when they were passing the medical marijuana laws. So they were providing medicine to people, not necessarily patients. So we tried. And then my other friend's going to jail next month for 3.5 years for trying to supply San Francisco patients.
Well, maybe we try to get Santa Cruz to make medical marijuana enforcement, or marijuana enforcement, period, the lowest priority, and in fact start investigating how much money is being spent, put into this project, and start. Berkeley has a series of laws it passed in the 70s that were subverted by the police department, and I think maybe we have a similar situation here, though I don't know that we have a set of laws in place. We supposedly have a liberal city council, which makes pronouncements about how the feds are to blame for all these problems. But in fact,
she will have to worry about is the feds coming in.
I think we have to worry about the local police arresting and harassing people. It was the local police that opposed this resolution, not the feds.
Hand it to the DEA to where to go, kind of thing.
Right, but the local police didn't want her to have her club. They were the ones who asked that Lisa Melano not have her club. So it wasn't the feds who came into the city council and said, we don't want her to have her club. It was our local police officers, right?
The feds will be the one to come down on her hard.
And the local Parks and Rec was the one that said, we don't want her to have her club.
Right.
But the local Harvey West Association.
Opinion, but I think they still left with smiles on their face when it happened.
You think so? Howard Scarry had a smile?
The lady from the park, she left with a big smile on her face.
So maybe they were making their mandatory bid to the right, kind of curtsy to the right, and then run off to the left.
Yes, I hope so.
We've been talking with?
Kelly Heath.
Thanks, Kelly.
Thank you.
Were you, in fact, helped in your project, Lisa Melano, by certain questionable radio commentators?
Most definitely.
And give us shower me with compliments.
Robert did something right. He put us all together on his radio show, and this is what made it happen. So, Robert, thank you for all the introductions.
You know, Mayor Rockin may be listening to you as you say this. This could be the end of your club. Are you sure you don't want to retract that statement?
Hey, he was also very much in the movement for making this happen, so You worked with him. How does that feel?
Hopkin and Norris in, in 2008. Could that be the ticket?
You guys worked it together. So, Robert and Norris. I don't know, dude. Do you want to be in there with the mayor?
We'll have to leave that for another time.
You did it together, though, somehow.
Well, we did it separately.
Separately together. Separately together.
He did put it on the agenda, and he did pass it, something that they could have done, I think, many years ago with other clubs. And I don't think that they were markedly less responsible than you, frankly. I just don't. I think that...
I don't know who they were, so I can't
I know. Say. Kate Wells was one of them.
Oh, she probably had a very good club.
She had a good club.
That's the one they closed down with the ordinance, right?
Right. They closed with the ordinance, tried to open another one. They closed it with an amendment to the ordinance.
No way!
Yeah. Yeah.
You think this is going to go there with me?
No. I think they... Because they never discussed her club before the city council this way. In fact, they never returned her phone calls.
Well, you know, that's why I did it this way, though, too, is because it's their law, their ordinance. You have to meet it on the level that it's presented, and that's what I did.
Your corporate machinations.
Training. Yeah, my corporate training taught me to meet it on their level. I didn't know it could be done, but it happened. It got done.
Yeah, well,
now we have to open.
You've got to hire some good staff here.
A whole new set of problems arises.
Hey.
Security's first, I guess. I'm going to have to meet with the police chief and get all that worked out.
Meet with the police chief and make sure you're a qualified medical marijuana provider association.
You think he likes the idea of off-duty police being my security?
I don't know. How have I never been close?
You have to have a card, though, so are there any Santa Cruz police that have a medical marijuana card?
We'll have to start looking. If there are any off-duty police officers like to call in, do 427-3772. Give a call. You could have a job with Greenway. Theodore. Any comments on what happened today? You've been fighting for decriminalization of marijuana, and particularly for medical marijuana accessibility, for decades.
Well, not so much recently, but I'm glad to see this project go forward. And bottom line is, I want to see marijuana legal for all of us to use, legal for all of us to grow, legal for all of us to share, and ultimately even sell. So I get very impatient with these small
obvious categories.
Well, these small steps. But that's the way the rest of the world works. So I'm glad for this small but important victory. And
pleased that you're impatient.
Hey, back at you. And very much appreciated that you what you had to say, because you always bring in the backstory and the bigger picture, and I thank you for that. Somebody has to do it, Robert. And
somebody has to have his hand twisted behind his back by Lieutenant Clark and put up on two misdemeanors in court. Am I whining? Yes.
And how is that going?
I'll be arraigned, and I face 2 years in jail, and I got no attorney. So all you attorneys out there, give a call to 427-3772. Actually, 423-HUFF is the number to call if you want to leave some legal offers off air. And it's the 27th of July, 2005, in front of the county courthouse, around 11:20. Here is a man with a kind of roll-along mini shopping cart.
But before we find out who that mystery person is, I want to point out that you are listening to Free Radio 101.1 and www.freakradio.org in Santa Cruz, California. I'm Robert Norris, unlicensed, unrehearsed, unready, and sometimes unwashed, but we won't get into that. You're welcome to call in if you got any comments. You've been listening to the aftermath of the Santa Cruz City Council meeting of the 26th, where Lisa Molyneux got her permit for a medical marijuana club to be opened in the Harvey West area. Other things happened at that council meeting, too, including a resolution that urging the president not to send the National Guard, or perhaps urging the governor not to send the National Guard. I got to actually get the specifics of it. It was a code pink feel-good resolution by the city council. I get passed unanimously. Actually, I'm looking at the spinning through the, let's see here. Resolution supporting the California National Guard troops in Iraq and requesting federal efforts to secure their withdrawal and allow greater state control over future deployments. And I'm probably going to play a little tape on that on Sunday in the morning when I come back. And also some tape on the last agenda item of the evening, which is the latest patch-up job on the Party at Your Peril ordinance passed by the Rotkin majority on the Santa Cruz City Council that implements draconian penalties for those who are engaging in loud parties. And it's an interesting discussion. I played some of it in the past. In a way, it's kind of now old news and past, but maybe not, depending on whether people want to challenge it in court. I'm continuing on my lonely way, trying to get records from city council as to what goes on sort of behind the scenes, because that can often be more important than what you read about in even on indie media or in the Santa Cruz Sentinel or hear even about on free radio, because we don't get some of the facts until much later. Those of you who have been following what I've been doing, I've been trying to make sure that the public records are given out to the public as they should be. For example, emails to city council members should be open public records. However, Mike Rotkin, our mayor, has declared that since all the emails are being forwarded to his house and his personal computer, that no public records are being kept at city council, hence all his emails are under lock and key. I kid you not. That's his response. And that's the response of the city attorney and the city clerk when I've requested access to Rotkin's city emails so we can see what kind of traffic and conversation he's having with constituents and members of the public that should be accessible and transparent but are not. Even more peculiar is the city council's, well, I should say the city staff's, and I'm talking about city clerk Leslie Cook here, whom I have kind of a personal fondness for. Haven't invited her out on any dates recently, but I like her as a person. I've reproached her on three different times with three different Public Records Act requests, simply trying to get a straight answer to the question, how do you access or can you access, can a member of the public inquire into the emails of other city council members, which city council members actually have a city council email address rather than are using the Rotkin dodge of sending emails to their homes. And she each time has said to me, I have no public records on this issue. She won't tell me which city council members have accessible emails and which don't, in terms of if you want to find out, if you want to make a request to find out what city council members have been getting from the public, what the input has been, what their responses have been to individual members of the public, insofar as we're talking about public business. And I'm not saying city council members have to account for what they do privately. That's, of course, an entirely different matter. But if you're a city council member, and we're talking about an issue of public policy, obviously that should be transparent and accessible under public records. But not only is it not, but we can't even find out where those emails are going in terms of you can't get a straight answer from the city clerk on this issue. At least I have not been able to so far. I most recently went in today and spoke with Assistant City Manager Martin Bernal, asking him, again, can you please tell me, you've already told me the policy of Mike Rotkin, that he doesn't let us see his emails because he's special, unlike any other executive in California, any other mayor or city council member or member of a public body. But what's the story with other council members? And Martin Bernal said, oh, well, I'll get back to you. And, you know, he probably will. Last time he got back to me, however, was a statement that he had no public records on that issue. In other words, he wasn't going to answer the question. So, the beat goes on. And these are important issues if you want to keep abreast of debates that are involve pressure groups that pressure city council members privately or behind the scenes. And lobbyists. You know, I think it's a fair series of questions to ask and to have answered. And important to know. And most recently, it revolved around Mayor Rotkin's calendar, you know, what his schedule of public appearances was. It should be a matter of public record. And Rotkin said, I keep my calendar in my back pocket, and you're not going to see it. And I said, okay, well, I'm not going to try to pick your pocket. You know, that's not the issue. The issue is you should be letting that be made accessible to the public under the Sunshine Act passed last year by the voters. And his response was, no, you just show up and harass me. And my response would be, well, I don't know what I'd do, but it's the cost of being a public official. You let people know where you're going to appear publicly, and if they're critics, yeah, they may show up, but they have a right to. And, that goes with the deal. That's part of the business of being a public official, is to deal with a dissent rather than by concealing where you're going and meeting kind of in a semi-private way, although supposedly publicly, with other groups, not letting the public know. And my response to that has been to say, okay, you're not going to give me your calendar? Good. I would like to have a copy of every email mentioning a public meeting which you would intend to go to in the next month and for the last month. And, of course, his response was, all my emails are private. So it's quite a task trekking down these folks. Let me know out there if anybody has had any experiences trying to find out information from the Santa Cruz City Council or Mayor Rotkin and have been successful or not successful. Give me a call here, either on the air or off air at 423-HUFF. And by the way, HUFF is now meeting again in the basement of the county building. HUFF is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and that's one of my main concerns, is to see civil rights restored to homeless people, such as the sleeping ban, which, by the way, is the subject of an interesting article in the upcoming Street Spirit for August. That's the homeless newspaper, which is sold by homeless people and also available around about here and there at the Homeless Service Center and different places. Look for the vehicle with all the bumper stickers and ask me for a copy. If you're homeless, you get them free. In fact, you can sell them and make money with them. If you're not homeless, you can get them, but you got to give a dollar to a homeless person. That's sort of the going price. Or more, if you feel like being generous. In that issue of Street Spirit is the SEIU, the big union that recently split from the AFL-CIO, which today, or yesterday, to its credit, finally declared itself against the war in Iraq and for the withdrawal of troops. Of course, nowadays that's not too big a position because the generals are saying, oh, well, once security is assured, we're going to withdraw the troops. There'll be a reduction next year, you know. Of course, that's the crap we heard about Vietnam year after year after year. So don't be deceived. We need to get our asses out of Iraq and fast. And it's not going to happen until everybody out there, yes, you too, raise your voices and say something about it loudly and clearly wherever you can, whenever you can. Again, Street Spirit will be covering the issue of the SEIU and the sleeping ban. The SEIU did a punt and a duck and cover on the sleeping ban at its last meeting. Instead of saying, yeah, the city council should dump this crazy law that says it's illegal to sleep and set up campgrounds and legal places for people to go and stop criminalizing people for doing things they have to do. Instead, they listened to the babble, frankly. Well, exaggerated concerns by Parks and Rec workers about how the police need this tool to drive the homeless on and deal with the bad campers. Criminalize 1,500 to 2,000 people each night, because tonight there's only space for 40 of them in the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program. That's right, 40, 4T. The number right after 39. 40 people are allowed to go into shelter tonight. That's provided by the city, and all those spaces, of course, are taken up. So the rest of the 1,500 to 2,000 have to face potential ticketing, arrests, troll buster assaults, hate crimes, and mainly the fear of not being able to use police services, not being able to camp together safely or in well-lighted areas. It's a barbaric situation. I do also want to put in a tip of the hat, however, for those people who are facing... I got a phone call recently from another Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcaster who lives in an area, I think it's out in Harvey West. Maybe not. Maybe it's out on the Mission Extension. I'm not sure. Where he's concerned that, you know, a certain group of homeless people are making his life miserable because they're leaving trash and litter all over and making a lot of noise at night. And I don't think advocacy for homeless people in any way involves advocacy for individuals who are abusive, whether homeless or not. And the way to deal with those issues is to, you know, if you can't reason with people like that and ask them to and get a response rationally, then you probably have to use things like police power, or I don't know, a hose or something. I don't know what. I mean, it's, you know, it's not a difficult situation. There's a lot of visible and hidden poverty around that we have to deal with, and because people are criminalized, they're often less. Sometimes it makes them more timid and more liable to respond to your threats. Sometimes it makes them more angry that their basic humanity is being trampled on. And sometimes people just don't give a shit because they say, if this is what the law is, you know, making it illegal to sleep at night, why should I have respect for any law? On the other end, some people are just inconsiderate. And most of us are inconsiderate at different times for different reasons. And it's a real big problem. I don't know what the solution is. I want to acknowledge it, though. So, I'm reaching the end of my rope here, or else to say the end of my 2 hours. I want to thank you all for listening, those of you who were. I haven't heard, I guess I got one phone call, but that's okay, because I enjoy listening to my own voice, even if you don't call in, so there. And I'm going to be continuing playing some more street interviews. Hopefully we'll have some reports from maybe some interviews from further away. I mentioned Grace Jackson, who's a psychiatrist and activist around issues of fighting forced medication and exposing the ills of the pharmaceutical multi-billion-dollar lobby that is flooding the country with pharmaceuticals that are unnecessary and damaging. Who knows? Maybe on Sunday we'll have some of that. I'm probably going to come back with some more tape from the city council on how they discussed the party at your peril ordinance, although some people have expressed their concern that this one has gotten a little boring, so we'll see how I feel and where we're at. If you have any requests or thoughts, or you have issues you want to raise around poor folks or just everybody and civil rights generally, you can give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And I remind you again, the HUFF meeting is at 8:30 on Wednesday mornings. We tried Farrell's Donuts on Ocean, but there ain't no bathroom there, and it's kind of hard to put our massive HUFF meeting people into a four-person table. So we're going to go back to the American Cafe and check us out there. That's actually the cafeteria in the basement of the county building, and it's right there next to the courts. You're welcome to join us, 8:30 in the morning every Wednesday, and give a call to the HUFF line if you want more information, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Until then, it's sayonara, and I think we're going to hear a little bit of a little commentary from Meriwether Mike, and then I will be back on Sunday, and thank you for being with me on this edition of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides.
With pipe cleaners, sunglasses, backpacks, goodness knows what other kinds of items we have here. He's sipping a drink, and he's got a guitar. He's seated on a, it looks like some kind of a white bucket, and he's underneath a multicolored umbrella. What's your name, sir?
Rainbow Merry Mike.
My dear, it's Meriwether Mike, as I insist on mutilating his name. And he's strumming away at the courthouse. Are you attempting to soothe the savage beast, to get some justice through music?
Right. We're passing the good news that the HUFF meeting is still on, and they moved to Farrell's today. So over there on Ocean, next to the old Baker Square, there's a donut shop called Farrell's. So if you want to find out the scoop on safe, go see the Huffsters at HUFF.
Or come to the SAFE meeting every Wednesday night. I should say the SAFE sing-along, sip-along, sup-along, and the sap-along, perhaps some would say, in front of New Leaf Market on Pacific Avenue and Soquel Streets, downtown Santa Cruz. Actually, the HUFF meeting is no longer at Farrell's Donuts. We did do a HUFF meeting there today, but unfortunately they have no open bathroom. And for those of us who have weak bladders, no go, man. Their coffee needs to, it comes out, it's, I mean, it comes in, it's got to
come out. So come to the American Cafe in the basement of the county building. That's the cafeteria in the county building right next to the courthouse, 701 Ocean Street. Any reports from the street, Uncle Mike?
I'm thinking, well, Hot Rod's got some stuff here. He's over at the jail now trying to get his ID straightened out. They've been after him about his stuff and camping. So if anybody's got experience with the camping ban and how to cope, because he seems to be still around even after a lot of hassling, you might get the lowdown from Hot Rod.
Well, Hot Rod has been on the show before, and perhaps we will get the lowdown, the high up, and the in-between from Hot Rod. Thank you, Mike.
All right, Robert. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
And Donald Duck will be appearing next week. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop's Piers Broadsides.
And you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 locally and www.freakradio.org out on the World Wide Web. I am Dusty Post, filling in tonight for Uncle Dennis, who is unavoidably detained elsewhere. And so we get to listen to this.
Sometimes I don't know what I'm doing, 'cause sometimes all my days are filled with rain. As I travel down life's highway, things ain't going my way, 'cause there's always someone swerving in my lane. They keep us swerving in my lane, and it's causing lots of danger. I'm a honking on my horn, I'm a shooting you the finger. I keep a switching on my bright lights, but you're just too dim to know when you're swerving on life's highway. You're running someone off the road. The day you drove away, I thought I never love another. How else could I feel? But now when you run into me, I can't believe I could not see. You're all tanked up, but no one's at the wheel. You keep us swerving in my lane, and it's causing lots of danger. I'm a cussing out your name, I'm a shooting you the finger. I keep a switching on my bright lights, but you're just too dim to know when you're swerving on life's highway. You're running someone off the road. And if I ever finally pass you, oh, when I do, and if I'm still alive, I won't ever see you, 'cause I'm ripping out my rear view and I'm shifting it on in to overdrive. But you're still swerving in my lane, and it's causing lots of danger. I'm a stomping on the foot feet, I'm a shooting you the finger. I keep a switching on my bright lights, but you're just too dim to know when you're swerving on life's highway. You're running someone off the road.
Nobody here at all.
quite yourself. Stop all that fuss, there ain't nobody here but us. And kindly point that gun the other way. And holla, holla, holla up and hit the hay, cause there ain't nobody here but us chickens. Ain't nobody here at all. You stomping around, shaking the ground, kicking up an awful dust. We chickens trying to sleep and you butt in. And holla, 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 holla with your chin, cause tomorrow is a busy day. We got things to do, we got eggs to lay. Round the day, get warm to scratch. That's a lot of setting, getting chicks to hatch, cause there ain't nobody here but us chickens, done. Nobody at all. So quiet yourself, stop all that fuss. There ain't nobody here but us. Hang on and point that gun the other way. And holla, 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 will ya? It's day, all right. Yeah. Setting, getting chicks to hatch. Ain't nobody here but us roosters. Ain't nobody at all. So quiet yourself and don't you stop all that fuss. There ain't nobody here but us. Hang on and point that gun the other way. And how am I gonna break a day?
Hey, boss man, now what you say?
CC Pickens, ain't nobody here but us chickens.
You could tell she was ready by the look in her eyes. She slipped into the crowd. She walked the place as she entered the place, yeah.